And the women of Afghanistan waited 6 years and it never got fixed.
Public universities stay closed in Afghanistan. It's Tuesday, October 5th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascao in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, COVID-19 pill offers hope. The world's most locked down city. President Biden pushes his domestic agenda. Protesting Chinese coal plant. No Shang-Chi movie in China. It's all on today's VOA Asia. One month into Taliban rule in Afghanistan, fears are increasing that women once again will be excluded from higher education and public life. Taliban leaders say public universities will remain closed until, they say, women can be protected in segregated classrooms. U.S. lawmakers are calling on the Biden administration to keep pressure on Taliban leaders to respect women's rights. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
In the Afghan capital, Kabul, a few women have returned to private universities, where they are required to be separated from male students. But Taliban leaders have closed all public schools, saying the measure is in place only until the government can ensure women are protected on transportation and on campus. Girls are going to primary school, and the Taliban have said it will not exclude women from higher education and public life, as they did when in power from 1996 to 2001. But Afghan women's rights activists like Mahbuba Siraj are skeptical.
For the first time when the Taliban came, they did not say that schools are going to be closed for girls. They didn't. Their excuses were exactly the same excuse as now. Wait, we will fix it for you. And the women of Afghanistan waited 6 years and it never got fixed.
During a congressional hearing in September, Secretary of State Antony Blinken told lawmakers he would appoint a senior State Department official to oversee issues specifically relating to women in Afghanistan, but this has not happened yet. Democratic Congresswoman Mary Gay Scanlon welcomed Blinken's promise in an interview with VOA.
And I think any nation state that ignores the talents or tries to suppress the contributions of women is at risk, both internally and externally. But the U.S. and the Group of Seven allies have agreed to coordinate the response to the Taliban. The U.S. has blocked the Taliban's access to Afghanistan's reserves to ensure they live up to pledges to respect women's rights and international law.
On Thursday, six Afghan women gathered in front of a secondary school in Kabul to call for girls to be allowed to return. Taliban guards snatched their banner, pushed them, and fired gunshots into the air to disperse them. They also hit a foreign journalist with a rifle and blocked him from filming. Scenes that advocates say fuel more questions about the future of women in Afghanistan. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. The Taliban said Monday their security forces had destroyed an Islamic State Khorasan province cell in Kabul and killed all the militants there. The overnight raid came just hours after a bombing outside the capital's main Eidgah Mosque on Sunday killed at least 8 Afghan civilians and wounded at least 20. There was no claim of responsibility for the mosque attack, nor did the Taliban say their operation against the Afghan affiliate of Islamic State, also known as ISIS-K, was a response to the deadly mosque bombing. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Afghanistan's mineral wealth stays underground. Lawyer says Myanmar's Suu Kyi is tired and seeks less court time. China's energy crisis puts global economic recovery at risk. New Zealand abandons virus elimination strategy. Singapore Parliament to debate bill to tackle foreign interference. expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia on this Tuesday. There's a new weapon against COVID-19, and it's in capsule form. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti explains how it's a breakthrough and why other pills have been discovered that we haven't heard about.
A stark illustration of the new number of COVID deaths in the United States. 700,000. From the White House.
That is a striking, horrifying number of lives lost.
But now, new hope. A pill that drug company Merck says prevents the coronavirus from multiplying. So promising that the clinical trials were stopped early, so more lives could be saved. Taken at the onset of the disease, the pill reduces the risk of hospitalization or death by half.
They could go to their pharmacy and take their medication the way they do other medicines. This would allow us to treat many more people much more quickly, and we trust, much less expensively.
Dr. Caleb Hernandez is an emergency room doctor who also researches COVID drug discoveries. He says three other pills have been introduced, one that reduces the need for oxygen by threefold, but not under big pharmaceutical names. So they sit on a shelf without the money for FDA approval.
Our government isn't set up to spend the $500,000 to do these studies. We rely on private companies to bring things to the FDA. And that's why you're not going to see as much innovation as you could see.
Experts worry that Americans will rely more on this new pill and avoid vaccines that teach the body to make its own coronavirus antibodies. But for remote countries, pills may be easier to administer. Affordability and distribution are other factors, though. Hernandez hopes that some drug, any drug, will end the pandemic.
But all I can think about is seeing that look on your face.
He sings this tribute to a fellow doctor who quit the profession because he was burned out from COVID.
We've been going for almost 2 years now, fighting every day, watching people die. And I think it's difficult when people in the community don't believe you. They think that you're part of some conspiracy or you're exaggerating or making things up. And then you go to work and you have to pronounce multiple people dead.
Merck plans to seek approval for emergency use of the drug, which could take about 2 months. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
Still ahead on VOA Asia. Melbourne, Australia, officially became the world's most locked down city during the pandemic. Happening now in Asia, Japan's parliament Monday confirmed Fumio Kishida as the country's next prime minister. The Liberal Democratic Party's ruling coalition holds a majority, taking 311 votes to the 124 for opposition leader Yukio Edano. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Melbourne, Australia has officially become the world's most locked down city since the pandemic began. Residents have endured 245 days of stay-at-home orders, surpassing Buenos Aires, Argentina. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Melbourne, the Victoria state capital, is now in its sixth COVID-19 lockdown. This one began more than 80 days ago on August 5. To date, the longest shutdown lasted for 111 days, between July and October last year. Stay-at-home orders were first issued in Australia's second biggest city in late March 2020 to curb the spread of infections. Many businesses have been forced to close, while millions of people have had to work and study from home, and nighttime curfews have also been imposed. Opposition politicians in Victoria have sharply criticised the state government over the length and intensity of the lockdowns. But the authorities have insisted they had no choice, but to repeatedly take drastic action because of the slow initial pace of Australia's national vaccination rollout, due in part to supply problems. The state's chief health officer, Brett Sutton, says the tough measures have saved lives.
I mean, it's been an awful crisis for the world, for Melbourne, more than any other place in Australia. We have to face the crisis that's in front of us. It's a reality that we are lagging amongst OECD countries for the vaccination rollout. That is the vulnerability that means that you have to have a lockdown to manage potentially catastrophic numbers and catastrophic numbers of deaths.
1,377 new locally acquired coronavirus cases and 4 fatalities were recorded in Victoria Monday. But even as Delta variant infections continue to surge, authorities are pressing ahead with plans to lift lockdown restrictions on October 26, when 70% of the population is fully vaccinated. The current inoculation rate is about 54%. Canberra and other parts of eastern Australia remain in lockdown. Sydney has had more than 100 days of stay-at-home orders since restrictions were imposed in late June. Its lockdown is expected to be lifted on October 11, when vaccination levels reach 70%. Australia has recorded 111,000 COVID-19 cases since the pandemic began. 1,300 people have died. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. North and South Korea restored their cross-border hotline on Monday, a step that Seoul said could help improve relations after Pyongyang triggered concern with a series of missile tests in recent weeks. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Continuing now with VOA Asia, U.S. President Joe Biden sets out this week to promote his domestic agenda. The president's Democratic Party is at odds with itself over two bills, a $1.2 trillion infrastructure package and a $3.5 trillion social spending bill. Michelle Quinn reports.
President Biden is under pressure this week to bring together two sides of his Democratic Party over the two massive spending bills that are linked and key to his domestic agenda.
I'm telling you, we're going to get this done.
When?
It doesn't matter when. It doesn't matter whether it's in 6 minutes, 6 days, or 6 weeks. We're going to get it done.
With bipartisan support, the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill for roads, bridges, and highways has passed the Senate. But in the House of Representatives, progressives in the Democratic Party say they won't approve that infrastructure bill until their party reaches a deal on the larger $3.5 trillion social spending package that includes money for initiatives such as the environment, education, and child care. Speaker Nancy Pelosi delayed the House vote on the infrastructure bill, angering some moderates. In a statement, Senator Kyrsten Sinema, a moderate Democrat from Arizona, called the delay inexcusable and a stunt to hold the infrastructure bill hostage to the larger measure. Republicans oppose the bigger spending plan, with Senator John Barrasso, a Republican from Wyoming, calling it this big government socialism reckless bill on Fox News Sunday. The Democrats, with a slim margin in the House and an evenly divided Senate, where Vice President Kamala Harris is needed to tip the balance in case of a tie, need to unite their party if they want to get the larger package passed. Senator Bernie Sanders is an independent from Vermont. He spoke on ABC's this week.
Both of these bills are going forward in tandem. going forward in tandem. We've got to pass them both.
The House is out of session for the next 2 weeks. President Biden reportedly told Democrats that the bill's price tag will likely need to come down to $2.1 trillion. And some progressive Democrats say a potential compromise could include shortening the period the bill will fund. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, in Thailand, the government began a vaccination program to inoculate students ages 12 to 18 using the Pfizer vaccines in order to vaccinate at least 85% of students and staff before reopening schools in November. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, coal provides more than 75% of South Africa's energy supply, but public and corporate pressure is mounting for that to change. Protests were seen across the country last week, and now a proposed Chinese-backed coal power plant may be scrapped. Linda Givtash has this report from Johannesburg.
It's what keeps lights on and industries running. But South Africa's coal energy sector is facing mounting pressure at home and abroad to end coal use for good. Frustrated with regular blackouts and the effects of pollution, citizens of the mineral-rich country rallied last week demanding cleaner, more reliable, and affordable alternatives.
Electricity has always been a problem in our community. So our community members went forward and they fought for electricity. But when the electricity came, it came at a very high price because we know that solar power is a better solution and it will be cheaper.
South Africa is among the world's top 15 largest emitters of carbon dioxide. Its reliance on coal stems from having vast quantities of the resource underground. This week, though, South Africa's government told the United Nations it is setting more ambitious climate targets. While environmentalists welcomed the commitment, they say the change to the energy sector is not happening fast enough.
We have to drastically reduce our emissions and reduce our reliance on coal by about 80% within the next 10 years, less than 10 years. We aren't seeing those changes happening fast enough. We also know that we need to essentially double our renewable energy build-out plans. That also is not happening.
As the rest of the world races to tackle climate change, analysts say pressure from businesses and foreign governments can force a faster green transition in South Africa.
If we do not reduce our overdependence on coal, we will be punished by our trading partners who will set up cross-border tariffs, adjustment tariffs to ensure that their own industries in the home countries of Europe and the United States and the East are on level playing fields with South African industry.
China announced last week it would no longer fund foreign coal projects. That means a Chinese-backed coal project slated to power a new industrial complex in South Africa's northern province of Limpopo could now be on the brink. The Center of Environmental Rights that has fought new coal projects says the cancellation will be good news for the climate and for residents.
The people living in the areas where these coal-fired power stations are based are suffering daily devastating health impacts as a result of South Africa's electricity choices. And we certainly hope that means that is the end for the coal-fired power station as proposed.
Analysts say China's decision will also have longer-term ramifications for coal development in South Africa and across the continent.
China was seen to be perhaps the last outpost of finance that could be available for new coal, and there's nobody else to pick up this ball to finance this new coal-fired power. So I think the days of new coal in South Africa are over.
The prospect of cancelling coal is a major victory for protesters who want to see South Africa embrace renewables on a larger scale. Linda Givtash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Captain Kirk is rocketing into space. Star Trek actor William Shatner plans to blast off from West Texas next week. Jeff Bezos' space travel company, Blue Origin, announced Monday that Shatner will join the October 12th flight with three others. It will be the company's second crew flight. Bezos, a huge Star Trek fan, was on the debut crew in July. At age 90, Shatner will become the oldest person in space. He'd also be the first actor in space if the Russians weren't launching an actress and a film director Tuesday to the International Space Station. Shatner's up-and-down space hop will last just 10 minutes and reach no higher than about 66 miles. Finally on VOA Asia, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, the latest Marvel film, is unique in that it features a largely Asian cast. the film has received a warm welcome by audiences in Asian countries. The film's release, however, has been indefinitely postponed in China. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
Chinese-Canadian actor Simu Liu plays Shang-Chi, the humble son of a powerful overlord. His father, Su Wenyu, played by Tony Leung, possesses the mystical Ten Rings that grant immortality and immense powers to whomever owns them. Eventually, Shang-Chi stands up to his father to save the world.
For many of us who grew up in the West, whose parents immigrated, you know, we never really saw ourselves on screen meaningfully. Shang-Chi will be an important piece of that conversation.
The movie by Asian-American director Destin Daniel Cretton features a diverse Asian cast that includes film icons Tony Leung and Michelle Yeoh, as well as Asian-American actress and rapper Awkwafina. According to Variety.com, the film cost about $150 million to make, one of the lowest budgets of any Marvel Cinematic Universe movie production, and has been a hit both domestically and internationally, grossing over $360 million so far, which, according to The Atlantic, is an even greater feat considering that pandemic-weary audiences are still hesitant to return to theaters.
It was made with the purpose of appealing to the Chinese market, but actually succeeded because it was something that appealed to Asian American audiences, to audiences in Asia, as well as to a wide range of people around the world who just want to see good movies.
Despite its global box office success, the film may be a casualty of the increasing political and economic tensions between Washington and Beijing. It has yet to be released in mainland China.
Under the Trump administration, the U.S.-China film agreement expired, which guaranteed access for Hollywood studio films to the Chinese market. The Chinese market is the largest in the world. Xi Jinping has made it very clear that one of his policy priorities is to have Chinese people tell Chinese stories.
Many of them are what you would call patriotic films or almost propagandistic films.
Chinese studies director at UCLA, Michael Berry, says these films are aligned with a grassroots movement by moviegoers who support nationalistic, action-packed Chinese films like the box office hit Wolf Warrior 2. Berry says netizens on Chinese social platforms such as Weibo have also criticized Shang-Chi for what they considered racist tropes.
The main villain, who is Shang-Chi's father, is actually modeled off this character called the Mandarin. And the Mandarin has roots in Fu Manchu and some of these racist yellow peril type discourse that had been very deep rooted in the West concerning China for quite a long time.
There was also backlash against Chinese-Canadian lead actor Simu Liu after a 2017 interview surfaced in which he criticized China.
Where he talked about his parents' rationale for immigrating from China to Canada. Nothing particularly explosive in that interview, but that's been grabbed onto by internet trolls and been judged by a lot of netizens as being unpatriotic or kind of harmful discourse for China.
Ann Kokas says Shang-Chi's international message and global box office success indicates that Hollywood films might still be able to thrive without the Chinese market. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you for listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Enjoy your day. Stay safe and be well now.